Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon. Nice to see some faces we've seen several times before. Okay. I was asked them, is it going to be an update on what you said last time? Yes. Okay. We don't change our mind. Okay. Right. So my name is Ian Fishwick. I'm the chief exec. I'm the founder of Adept.
I'm John Swaite. I'm the finance director. I've worked for Adept for the last 10 years in the finance director capacity. Before that, I was working for Adept auditors in the corporate finance arena, where I worked on the float of Adept. We were the reporting accountants.
What we're going to do is I'm going to start off with, why do you as directors and shareholders like this business model? Because sometimes I listen to presentations where you talk for ages about the company and you're waiting for the punchline. You know, does it sell anything? Does it make any money? Right, so we'll start from that basics first, okay? So the first bit is, we've been on the market since 2006 and over 40% of this business is owned by the shareholders. So let's explain what we're not. We're not a couple of employees that are out having a wonderful time spending somebody else's money. That's not what we are, okay? So your safest bit is it's our money as well, and we treat it like that. Now, the next bit is, I'm probably no different to most of you. I like predictability. I like certainty, particularly in uncertain times, right? So over 80% of the revenue that we have is recurring. Now, we can't change the fact that we'll talk about IT later on. If somebody says to us, can you upgrade our services and things, every now and again, we have to sell some boxes, but it's not fundamentally what we want to do. I like products that have got decent margins on them. We're sat at 20 to 21% EBITDA, and one of the questions I get most commonly is that sustainable? Well, on the basis we've done it consecutively now for 15 years, I think we've proven that point, okay? But it's not just that we're keeping the EBITDA at that level over, and if you're thinking that the last 15 years has been three or four rather major events and it's not got in our way. We've also posted 15 consecutive years of rising EBITDA. Okay. Less than 1% CapEx. I hate CapEx. The reality is I grew up as a young man with Lord Weinstock. You know, I am a GC Marconi cash is king man. I cannot see the point of having a business model where every time you make 100 quid profit, you have to spend 100 quid capex and you've got nothing left. That's not a model to me, okay? And what I want to see is I want to see that EBITDA turns itself into cash. The first sign of a business that I would run away from miles is when I start to see EBITDA posted, but where's the cash gone? That's accounting nonsense. You know, I grew up with the basics of if I buy something for a pound and I sell it for £1.50, you're entitled to ask me, where's that 50p gone? Okay, we are very old fashioned in that respect. And in an era of very, very low interest rates, we oscillate between 5 to 8% cash flow yield. Okay, so that's why we like it, but I'll do it a different way. Let's do it in terms of earnings per share. March 18 numbers. And March 19, 24.9, 27.4 earnings per share. As you can see on there, CapEx is tiny relative to that, okay? So free cash flow, let's just do this March, 24.1. Do we pay dividends? Yes, we have 6 or 7 years of consecutive double-digit dividend increases, right? But even now, you can still see the dividend cover is 2.75 times. So when you ask me, is that likely to continue? I think, possibly. Okay, we're nowhere near, right, that bit. Okay, it took me 25 years to find something that was recurring revenue with no capex. It's fundamentally a cash machine. Now I'll tell you what we do. Okay, all right. We started out as a conventional telecoms company selling calls and lines, and many of us are trying to get into the center point, which we all call managed services, right? And we're coming at it from three different angles, really. There are telecoms companies trying to do more things. Over here, there are IT companies who are trying to get into this middle space, and fundamentally, most of them have spent the years selling PCs and boxes, but not doing a lot else. And then you've got data centers who are trying to be a bit more than a posh hotel. Right, and say, apart from renting out space, I think we've done one of the fastest steps into that space of anybody. And I'm going to talk about a transformation, right, over the last 2 years. Now, I get very frustrated when I listen to people talk about transformations, because often what they mean is they've changed the colour of the logo and they've put cloud in the name and now we're different to what we were yesterday. That's not transformation, okay? And I'll show you some examples.
So in terms of the numbers, it's talking about transformation. It's not just in the quality of the business, but it's also in the scale of the business. So in the last 2.5 to 3 years, the revenue's grown from 22 million per annum up to the current run rate, which is just over 48 million per annum. But also the EBITDA's grown on the similar sort of ratio, up from 4.6 million to 10.5 million. Now, at this point, we did our last acquisition in August 2017, so you won't actually see these full-year numbers until the year-end March 19, so we only got an eight-month contribution to the acquisition, but we can see those numbers in the management accounts and certainly in the second half results.
So as we go through, transformation to me is two things. It's can you see it coming through financially in the numbers, but can you see operationally there are some operational stats that say, wow, this is a completely different business to what it was before? Now, like many things, that huge change over a 2.5 year period started with a chat in the pub, which basically said, what is Skype? Most of us use it now in a private life, but there's a business version as well. What is that? Is that a software app or is it telecoms on your PC and your laptop? And as people who are so-called experts in this industry, our conclusion after a pint of lager was, it doesn't matter. And even we don't know, right? The point is, it's getting very, very difficult now to explain where telecoms ends and IT starts. And therefore we said, right, now's the time to move. Let's be a very fast second mover. So I'll show you what we did. I'm a big fan of strategy on one page. I've been an MDO chief exec for 28 years. No, that's the point where you're supposed to go. Surely not, surely not. I have 28 years, right here. And I'm a big fan of, if you can't explain what you're trying to do on one piece of paper, there's a fair chance that it's not going to happen, okay? So let's do the top bit first. We said, if we go straight from telecoms to IT, the guys in the city might go, where's he gone now? But fundamentally, if we think of, say, this table as a building, then we were doing whatever type of connection you want to the outside world. Doesn't matter what it was, everything from calls and lines to broadband to bigger networks. But we never went inside more than a comms room with a wire to plug something in. And we said, let's start with, we'll go inside the building and we'll take over all of the telecoms inside, all the unified comms, which in English just means, let's get all your devices talking to each other. Let's make sure we can do the Wi-Fi, because it's more than ever now the way you accept the internet. And then when we get there and we prove that that works, then let's say, while we're here, shall we move into IT and take over the rest of the building? It's easier to say now what we don't do rather than what we do. We don't sell loads of mobile phones, but we do put apps on phones. But everything else you'll find inside the IT and comms part of a building is what we do. Now, we were very, very clear. This is an acquisition vehicle, okay? We've done 24 deals in 15 years. On average, we buy one out of every 12 businesses we look at. So we've done due diligence on something like 300 businesses in this industry over the last decade. We know what they should look like before we open the tin, okay? And we're very clear in terms of focus as where we wanted them. So we said, we'll focus on London and the Southeast. And you probably spotted my accent is from Wigan. It's definitely not from down south, okay? Brexit or no Brexit, the one bit I do understand is London will always go faster than Derby as we're here today, or Wigan or Newcastle. It just will, okay? And the second part of it was, we'll head for the public sector. Now, the London bit's probably obvious. The public sector bit, less so. The government set a target that they want a third of all public sector spend to be with small and medium-sized enterprise by 2022. So the days of getting a tick because you buy from IBM and BT are over. Now, one of the reasons why I know that is at Cabinet Office level, I sit on what's called the SME panel. There are 20 industries represented, and I represent the telecoms and IT industry, advising the government what's stopping you guys getting your share. Now, our analysis, which has proven to be correct, was it's not the tiny businesses that are going to do that. It's not the very small ones. It's the medium-sized ones, okay? And I'll give you some examples a bit later on as to how we've made a big inroads. But also, there's a specialist trade association called Inopsis, which, when we're being fancy, we say, It's the digital infrastructure and service providers to the public sector. You might know the members better as BT, Virgin, Telefonica, O2, people like us. The industry elects its own leaders. This is the fifth year that I've been the commercial director of Inopsis. Why did I do that? Because it means if there's a cross-industry negotiation with a government body, I tend to lead for the industry, and therefore it made ADEPT very, very well known in that sector without spending zillions on marketing. Okay? Right. So, whatever devices you've got, we integrate them so they talk to each other seamlessly. We knew there was going to be lots of commonality when we started to buy these different businesses. The truth is, now that we've got there 2 years, 3 years in, there's even more commonality than we ever expected. And one of them is this, managing your endpoint devices remotely. There's historically never been a successful roll-up in IT in the UK or anywhere else. And the reason for that was IT was fundamentally men in vans with a screwdriver who turned up and fixed something. It's really hard to get economies of scale out of that. If you look at the support teams now in all the businesses I'm going to show you, fundamentally, they do what telecoms guys have always done, which is they remotely log in. People can log in and fix my iPhone. You know, the routers in the roof that get you access to Wi-Fi, we log in remotely. Whatever it is, they're all doing the same thing, okay? We still, as we've always done, for those of you who've seen us many times before, have deals with every major carrier in the UK, and therefore we'll get you the best connectivity wherever you are. And our origins voice is not going away, but we don't care whether you want traditional calls and lines, or you want voice over IP or over a data network. We're not bothered whether you want the stuff in your building or in your data center, our data center, all of the above. It's what we do, okay? A guy asked me the other day, can you not do something on addressable market size? And so I have done. And I'll show you in a minute why I can't get terribly excited about it. We're in a growing market, okay? The blue is IT services. This is cloud and hosting, networks and connectivity, voice. We do all those things, okay? It's growing from 29.3 billion to projected to be 33.5 in 4 years. Our turnover is just under 50 million. A guy in the city said to me one day, what do you think of your market share? And I said, I'd like some. And my point is a very sensible one, because depending on how many decimal points you do, we disappear off the graph. Even at 50 million turnover, you're 0.1% of a very big industry. So I don't care whether you define it as 20 billion, 40 billion, it's a big one. Okay, there's lots to go at, okay?
So what do we do? Ian said there, we are just under 50 million, so we're 48 million revenue currently. And it sits in the three different areas, telecoms, unified comms, and the IT software and services. To give you some idea of the scale across the five businesses that we've got. So ADEPT in Tunbridge Wells, 17 million revenue. That was the original core business, connectivity business. In May 2015, we bought a business down in Fleet that was originally called Centrix. That's a £12 million turnover business in unified communications. Then a year later, we bought a business in Northampton. That's turning over 5 million, also in unified communications. Then we took the step into IT and software, buying a business in Chingford called RIT Department, turning over 6 million, and Atomwide in Orpington, that's 20 minutes down the road from the head office, turning over 8 million. So we've, in terms of revenue spread, we've roughly got a third sitting in telecoms, unified comms, and IT services. In terms of what these divisions do, so the original telecoms business is pure connectivity, virtually 100% recurring revenue in there, supplying anything from calls and lines, superfast data networks, and SIP and hosting. The unified comms businesses are focused on two different areas of the market. So when we bought the Fleet business, it's very much focused on mid-tier size businesses, enterprise customers, typically somewhere between 200 to 7,500 user businesses. So not the likes of Lloyds Bank, Marks and Spencers, but the next tier below. What we realised quite soon was when we bought the Fleet business was that the sales teams there were focused on the larger customers, and we didn't have an offering for the bottom end, the sub 150 user customers. That's why we bought the business in Northampton that's focused on small business customers from anywhere from sort of 3 to 150 employees. In the IT world, the first business we bought was the business in Chingford. That's a commercial IT business focused on business customers, providing everything you need for an outsourced IT department. What we realised was that we had the IT offering in the commercial world, but we didn't have any public sector exposure in there. So when the Atomwide business came up for sale last year in August, we went for it, and so we now have a big stronghold in IT for education. So we are currently just under 50 million sales per annum after the acquisition of Atomwide in August 2017. We're operating in seven locations, focused very much on London and the South East. And we've got over 200 members of staff now with long levels of experience in the industry. We've got a large number of employees that are 15 to 20 years in the sector. We buy from virtually every IT and telecoms vendor in the UK. This is a sample of them. We use tier one and world-class partners. Now, the reason that we have this sort of roster is we have at least two partners in every product and sector that we're supplying, partly for competitive tension to keep the wholesale pricing keen, but also what you find, particularly in the data connectivity world, is that the networks have cherry-picked around the UK of where they're going to be strongest. So what we're able to do is knit together a solution from any of these suppliers for a customer. So if you're a multi-site customer, what you'll tend to find is that the best solution for, say, if you've got a branch in Newcastle and one in London, is that the best solution for you will actually be two completely different carriers. So we can offer a best of breed solution at a keen price point for customers across the UK.
Okay, I'm going to talk you through the deal we did in August, because it's the most recent, but I'm going to remind some of you and explain to those we've not met before the model that we use, okay, because this is how we reduce the risk on deals. So we put an initial amount down. This was 6x EBITDA. We then give them performance targets, and at the end of the year, we pay for what we get. So it always recalibrates itself to get rid of the risk, okay? Now, all the senior management team's kept. It's 20 minutes from Tunbridge Wells. It's literally just down the road, which helps. There's all sorts of reasons why I think this is a tremendous deal. We showed you before that 6 months prior to this, we bought a commercial IT business for effectively the same price, which means at the bottom, we've got an app development team and a data centre effectively for free. Now let's do apps. The number of times I've seen a couple of young people march up and say, oh, it's a fantastic idea. No product, no sales, but we're going to be billionaires, right? We've got an app development team that's got 50 apps with over 2 million users paid for. Okay? Right. Now, I'll give you an idea of the types of things that we do. Okay? Atomwide are the chief technology partner for London Grid for Learning. Now, London Grid for Learning is the only example where the 33 boroughs in London have actually agreed to work together. Now, it started off, it's a not-for-profit organisation, so it started off many years ago with the, can we put broadband into schools? Then it went to, we need much faster things because they're downloading videos and all sorts of things. Forget that bit, we could do that bit, but many years ago that was done by Virgin. They then said, what are we going to do with all this fast access to these schools? 97% of everything that goes across that network into London schools is not just supplied by us, it was developed by us, and it's hosted out of our data centre in Orpington. Okay, so we now have over 3,000 schools and academies, about 2,500 in London, and we have agreement with London Grid for Learning to work together to take the capitalist technology outside around the UK, targeting in particular multi-academy trusts. As is on there, we've got over 2 million users of our apps already. Okay, when we went into IT, one of the reasons why we liked it was it's moving away from selling stuff to renting stuff, recurring revenue. So you don't buy Word and Excel anymore. You rent it every month through Office 365. We like that. It's what we grew up with, recurring revenue. And we said, we need Office 365 experience. We now have over a million Office 365 users. In the words of Microsoft, it's the largest single deployment of Office 365 anywhere in Europe. This is what I'm calling transformation. Right, I think we all know that the idea of security having to protect websites is not going to go away. We are web filtering now in Orpington over a billion web requests a day. Okay, to protect the schools. We have a Cisco firewall in every single school, so we have over 3,000 of these things. We can't officially say we're the largest Cisco firewall deployer in Europe, but I don't know anybody who is bigger than us. Right, okay. And similarly in terms of Microsoft Exchange, the big server clusters. So you see what I mean by this is not just transformation, the numbers are bigger. This is a fundamental difference in 2.5 years. Okay.
So if we look at the financials of the business in terms of the revenue, you can see here the growth in the last 3 years has been pretty significant. We're up 36% in the last 12 months based on the half year numbers, and up 120% from the March 15 to the current run rate, where we are at 48 million revenue after the Atomwide acquisition. As Ian said earlier, we are focused on recurring revenue. We are over 80% recurring revenue. And if you look inside the customer base, the customer concentration is very low. We've got more than 15,000 customers, so that revenue's spread across a wide number of customers in every sector in the UK you could think of. In terms of the quality of the revenue stream, that's shown significant improvement over the last 3 years as well. If you went back to March 2015, the managed services part of the business, which is where we were trying to get the growth into, was only 27% of what we do. So we were very much still a fixed line telephony business. Back on the September 17 half year results, and when the full year results come out, the numbers won't be dramatically different, but the managed services proportion will have grown. We were more than two thirds managed services. So the transition and trying to move away from the fixed line business and into managed services has really come through in the numbers. As Ian said, part of the strategy on one page is focusing on London and the South East and also on the public sector. It's true, we've got quite a large proportion of the revenue in the public sector, but we mustn't forget that we are also a commercial business, and more than 60% of the revenue is coming from commercial customers. So in there, we're supporting more than 15,000 sites for commercial customers. So there's some worldwide brand names in there. Coca-Cola Europe is our customer. Citrix is a customer as well. There are also national brand names, Halfords, Carluccio's, Express by Holiday Inn,
Asos,
many names you'd recognise that trade in the UK. Also, we've got radio stations in the customer base. TalkSport is a customer of ours, so every time you turn on the radio and hear a sports broadcast from a sports ground around the country, it's coming down an adept telephone line, it's just a straight phone call being broadcast across the radio. One of the other particular niches that we have is business centres. We've got more than 200 business centres in the customer base. That largely came through some expertise in the Fleet acquisition that we did. They've got a particular nice piece of billing software that enables the business centres to be able to recharge the services we're providing, so it gives them a revenue earning opportunity as well.
In terms of public sector, there's just over 400 councils in the UK. We're in over 100 now. So, you know, the days of us just starting this are now long, long gone. Last time I looked, it was 108 or 109, I think it was. The Houses of Parliament is a debt. The days of the big guys running things like that have quite clearly gone, and part of the Cabinet offices, right? We've talked about education already. Our first forays into public sector were universities. Often people get confused that somehow the city and the banks are leading technology. I don't think they are. It's the universities and always will be. And if you want to understand why I think that is, if anybody's got a teenager at home and think what they do to your internet access when they start doing online gaming and downloading films, what are you going to do when 7,000 or 8,000 of them turn up in one building? Right? That's what a university is, and that's why the fastest connectivity that's available is always goes into universities first. And yes, we can say we do Oxford and Cambridge and places like that. The big flagship one is Southampton, where we do 27 sites into research hospitals and all sorts of things. Right, okay. Now, we were always going to go councils into NHS, into education. When we were looking at NHS, we had this chicken and egg problem. How do you sell to an NHS hospital when you've never sold to an NHS hospital? You go and buy the largest provider to private hospitals. Now, I suspect in this audience there might be one or two people who have private medical insurance, right? Even if it's only me, okay, right? Virtually every famous hospital you can think of in London is ours. Wellington, Portland, Harley Street, Shard, London Bridge, Guy's, St. Thomas. anything you can think of any size is ours. Now, on the back of that, that gave us credibility, and we're now in 15 NHS trusts. So we've gone a long way down this route. So let's do it a different way. I said to you, we're going to do that transition of technology, and we're going to target London, South East and public sector. So let's just do London. How did we do in 2.5 years? Parliament, Cabinet Office, every single council and every single school, hundreds of commercial customers through IT, half of all the business centres in London, and we've even got the commercial radio station. That's clarity and focus at what you're doing. Okay. Those who have heard us several times will say it is just an update on what we told you last time. Okay. And all the bottom bit's saying is to get government tenders, you need to be on the frameworks, and we're on loads and loads of them. Okay.
We saw a nice revenue graph with revenue going up. It's nice to see that the EBITDA is going up as well. As Ian said earlier, business has been going for 15 years now. This is the 15th consecutive year of EBITDA growth. In line with the revenue increase, EBITDA is up 34% in the last 12 months and up just under 130% on the last 3 years. In terms of EBITDA margin, what's happening there? I mean, it's stable for the business. It's always been stable, oscillating around 20 to 22% at the half year. It's 21%, not expecting anything different when the full year numbers come out. In terms of looking across the five businesses we've got in the group, that EBITDA margin is consistent across all of the businesses in the group. They're all trading within a 19 to 22% EBITDA percentage band.
Let's just take that point, because that's a really interesting one. We have not just moved across the technologies, we've converted every business we've touched into the same fundamental model of 80% plus recurring revenue, next to no capex, and generating, they're all in a small band, 18 to 22% EBITDA. So we've shown that you can take the model that we have and keep doing it and doing it and doing it.
What we also like to see is the free cash flow conversion. As Ian said earlier, we are very much focused on EBITDA and turning it into cash. EBITDA cash conversion always oscillates between 80 and 100%. So last year, 82%. The forecast out for this year and next year is 100% cash conversion. In terms of CapEx as well, as Ian said earlier, we are CapEx light. We are literally offices with desks and PCs. We are a non-infrastructure player. So revenue spend on CapEx is, well, we say they're around 1%, is typically well below 1% of revenue. And in terms of the free cash flow yield, whether you look at the unlevered or levered, they're good numbers. In terms of the 2018 and 2019 forecasts that are out in the market, they're both around 8% free cash flow conversion. And we do pay a dividend, as Ian mentioned earlier. The dividend payout is typically around 30% of free cash flow.
Yeah, in simple terms, we just take the free cash flow, we pay out about 30% of it, and 70% goes back into the business.
So we're a business, as Ian said, that done 24 acquisitions over the last 15 years, which have been funded through debt. We've been using debt as a method over the last 15 years. We have a 30 million revolving credit facility that's shared equally between Barclays and RBS. In terms of the debt, for us, it's not the quantum of the debt, it's the leverage number which we keep an eye on. At March 18, the actual quantum of the debt was 18.1 million, but the debt to EBITDA ratio was 1.9 times. What we're targeting is a level of 2 times and below. The banks have set a limit of 3 times, so we want to maintain significant headroom below that. We accept that on the day we do an acquisition, that will typically be our weakest point because we're carrying all of the debt and none of the profitability. So the leverage may go up to 2.5 to 2.6, but what we want to be able to see is within 9 to 12 months that we're going to get back down to the 2 times and below level. When we've got cash conversion that's oscillating in the 80 to 100% ratio, then repaying the debt down is not a problem for us.
Some of you heard me talk before, will say for years and years I've said I'm obsessed with the number 2. I want EBITDA net debt under 2 as fast as I can after a deal, preferably within 12 months. I want dividend cover well north of 2, and you saw it was 2.75 before, and I want CapEx nowhere near 2%. I want it under 1, okay? As long as you keep those basics, you're going to produce some sensible numbers.
Earnings per share. We've only got the half-year numbers out at the moment in the domain, but what you saw there was a 29% increase to the adjusted PBT. and a 20% growth to the adjusted EPS. The forecasts out in the market at growth to 25p and just over and 27.4 for 2019. We're more than comfortable with those sort of numbers. So what we want to be able to see is the growth in the EBITDA number, but also keeping an eye on what's happening to the EPS number.
As I said to you before, we've been paying dividends for 6-7 years now, and you can see we've just announced increased dividend again, which is up 13% on a year. And I think in that funny year, first year post-Brexit, with all the uncertainty around, that's not a bad shout to say 13% increase in dividend. And the key bit for us is that sustainable? Well, I think with the metrics we've just shown you, there's no reason why not. We're still expecting double-digit dividend growth. I mean, in an ideal world, I like to push the yield to like 3 to 4%, but every time I push the dividend up, the share price moves and we end up back at 2 and a bit. That's the maths of it, isn't it? Right. Okay. Right. Open to questions.
What's your biggest threat?
I think the good news here is because we don't have massive customer concentration, there is no single one that could flip us over. We've very deliberately not gone for anything where a single customer falling over would cause us problems. The flip side of that is you don't see us announcing big contract wins every now and again because none of them are individually big enough. So if you ask me, is there any individual one that keeps me awake at night, there isn't.
There's no really big disruption out there, no really big...
No, we're in the middle of it. I mean, at the end of the day, change is the only constant in technology. I mean, I've been doing this for 28 years. It's no different now to it's ever been.
You mentioned you've got 15,000 customers. What's the rate of churn on an annual basis? And when people, assuming people go, is it price, product offering, service, or what?
When you're on five companies, you have at least five answers to that. Okay, so if I try and keep it simple. If you're selling a commodity product to small businesses, then there's an industry standard that will be like 12 to 15%. But that now is only probably about 8 to 9 million of the 48. Okay. When you're in the more complex products, it's driven by the switching process more than anything else, right? If you can go on a website and move very easily, then you're on price comparison, you can just move. Okay. I'll give you an extreme example. So let's not pretend this is the norm. In a private hospital, we have everything from the connections to the outside world, connect the hospitals together. We have everything inside linked into the patient system, so we can chase you to remind your appointments, make sure you pay because it's a business, linked into the medical things so we can have heart attack alerts and all sorts of things. They're really difficult to actually move. Okay, so at the top end, it tends to be you'll only lose something like that if somebody is a takeover and you're on the wrong end of it. Okay. So it's not the big issue. Okay.
Oh, listen, it was a great presentation. Thanks very much. And I love your no-nonsense approach to cash. But I was just looking at the Stockopedia report, and I was surprised to see that 60% of the net assets is intangible. Can you elaborate on that?
Right. That's pretty straightforward. Okay. Well, you bought a lot of businesses.
But there's goodwill is separate as well. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's intangibles and goodwill. So we value the customer base and then the other intangibles that might come with it. So for example, with the Atomwide acquisition, we took on the software. So we actually own the IP for the software. They're all sitting on the balance sheet as intangible assets.
And will they be amortised?
They're being amortised, yeah. We have to do annual impairment reviews for every single asset that we've bought. So that consists of looking at the revenue streams and looking at the churn rate of those up or down, and then amortising on a discounted cash flow basis to see what the estimated useful life is of that.
So we don't do a broad brush one. We do every single deal that we've done independently. What's the revenue stream, discounted cash flow on that deal? And on every single thing that we've bought, it's way longer than we expected.
Yeah, I mean, even if the assets are growing, we're still amortising them anyway, because under international accounting standards, you have to amortise them.
Ian, John, thank you very much indeed. I'm afraid we're going to have to finish there. If there are more questions, then
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.